Efficiency is power, and Chevrolet knows that's a fact. That's why they've been at the vanguard of electric vehicle innovation. See a variety of modern EVs, like the new Silverado, Blazer, and Equinox, now with 0% APR for 60 months. And with a $7,500 clean vehicle tax credit on new 2025 models, now's the best time to get in the EV wave. Visit your local Chevy dealer for details about these great models today. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive.
Welcome, everybody, and welcome, fellow patriots. Welcome, fellow deplorables. Welcome, all of you, jerks of society, rock dwellers, sycophants, stinkos, mega Nazis. You know what they call you. And by now, you better know what we call you. That's friends, allies, and patriots. And you're always going to be welcome here. And this is the Conservative Commandos. And I'm Rick Trader, coming to you from the Maipla Studios, the Meister Studios of the AUN TV Network. And joining me today as my co-host, as she does a couple of times a week, is Sharon Angle, the patriot from the battleground state, the battleborn state, the silver state of Nevada. And here she is. Welcome, Sharon. Welcome back to Conservative Commandos.
Well, thank you, Rick. It's always great to be here. I always like to discuss some of my favorite topics. I hope our audience enjoys that too, that we pick out things that are interesting, sometimes kind of odd. I have one. I've always
an odd and an interesting thing.
It's odd and interesting, okay, in a way. I've always been interested in education. You have too, because your
you
wife
being
is
a teacher. Yes,
I've been a teacher, so we have an interest there. And it turns out that even though education doesn't involve transportation, it always gets in the mix. Mm-hmm. How are you going to get these kids to school? Because it should be their parents' responsibility, but we know that parents aren't responsible, is really basically what the school districts are saying. They, if we don't provide the school buses, they won't come. And in a way, there is some truth to that. But with the homeschooling movement and also with the private school and charter school movement, there's no buses for a lot of that. And right, the kids still get to school. So here's one for you. School districts ditch hard to repair electric buses. Okay. They decided that after Biden was gone, so were those electric buses. And the reason they're, and I don't know exactly how to go into this, except for that Biden spend $159 million to award the Quebec-based Lion Electric to manufacture 435 school buses between 2022 and 2024. And now that company has fallen into bankruptcy.
So, did you say Quebec?
Quebec.
As yes, in Canada.
As in Canada.
So, Quebec. We have enough money going overseas to China for the solar panels and windmills. And so they wasted all this money on electric buses, but they didn't even waste it here. They wasted it in Canada.
Yeah, okay. There's a lot of odd things going on in this story. That's why I thought, well, this is something that we probably need to just look at.
Indeed.
As a result of their bankruptcy, now they've fallen into bankruptcy, right? They spent $159 million to get these 435 school buses. That's an outrageous amount. $159 million for 435 buses. I haven't done the math on that, Rick.
I haven't either.
But it seems like there's a lot of money involved in each school bus. These electric buses aren't coming cheap. That's what I'm saying. And
amen to that.
And they warned school districts after they went bankrupt that because of their dire financial straits, they won't be able to service these electric school buses. So now we got 435 school buses that we're going to have to take the hit on. You know, they're not, what would they be? Less than 4 years old. And if they've got any service problems, gosh, it's up to us, right? No warranty. And because they're a Canadian company, it's kind of hard for us to go after a foreign country to make good or prove up or, you know, give us the service that we need on this all electric fleet. And also because they declared bankruptcy, that pretty much takes them out of the picture for any kind of liabilities here. So now we've got this going. So several superintendents explained that while they would try to keep the electric fleet of school buses operating for as long as possible, they would eventually have to return to diesel due to the diesel school buses being more affordable.
More efficient.
Yes. And,
you don't have to plug them in.
Right. There's a whole list of problems here besides them being so very expensive. And it seems like they just took the electric fleet because it was government provided. This Mike Leskowich of Homer School District in Michigan said that we're going to keep our electric fleet on the roads as long as possible. His school district received $2.8 million in federal funding to procure seven of these buses.
Okay,
in 2022 for seven.
Eight, so, seven. So that's roughly a
4 million, isn't it? Let's see.
So what is that, 500,000 a bus?
Well, yeah, that's what, well, I'm thinking it's, yeah, 500,000. Yeah. So at least.
All right. I'm looking seven, up here, yeah. The cost of an electric school bus. Upfront costs for a new electric school bus typically ranges from 260,000 to 550,000. With the average can fall between 300,000 and 400,000. That's for an electric school bus. Now, you know, Sharon, you talk about school buses. You know, when I was a kid, I didn't walk through knee-deep snow or anything to get to school. But my school was about six blocks away. So I either walked or rode a bike. That's how I got to school, at least for the first 12 years that I was in school. I either walked or I took a bike. Rode my bike. There was no school buses. At that time, you had to live more than 2 miles away from the school for the school to provide a bus for you. And then when I went to high school, the high school was about 12 miles away. And I did get a bus, a school bus. But even that, I had to go three blocks away to get the school bus. Now, if you follow a school bus today, anybody that follows a school bus today, they know the darn bus stop just out in front of every single house.
Right.
They don't want kids even to walk to the corner. I mean, they stop at each and every house. So I would think the maintenance on school buses is pretty high, because that's a lot of braking. That's a lot of changing of gears. That's a lot of pushing of the clutch. I would think that school buses, there's a lot of maintenance on them. So now these school buses, this company is going out of business or going bankrupt, and you're not going to be able to get them serviced by the company that manufactured them. So how much, as I said, this was the upfront cost for these school buses. All right.
Right.
I wonder what it's going to cost now to keep them on the road.
Well, like you said, they have to be plugged in. Mm-hmm. They have a completely different maintenance model than a diesel. So your mechanics have to be trained in a different way. It's the same, what happens if you have to go long distance on a bus trip? I don't think I would want to take a diesel bus to a game that's too far away, you know, you might not be able to might not get it charged. You know, there's all kinds of really kind of essential things that go along with this.
The other thing is each one of these school buses are going to need to be charged overnight, right? So that means you need a charger for each and every school bus. So that's an additional cost. And any time a school has anything done, any kind of maintenance, any kind of construction, you know you're getting unions involved. Not saying anything negative about the union bus drivers or about the union contractors, but that's an additional cost. Just to give you an idea, Sharon, the cost of a new diesel school bus, between $125,000 and $160,000. So you're looking at the cost of an electric school bus. The initial cost of an electric school bus is double.
Yes.
It's more
at
than
least,
double.
At least.
Almost triple. Almost triple.
Well, those ones in Michigan were $400,000 apiece. That's what they got to buy these buses. And the government paid $365,000 apiece for these buses.
Jeez.
There's a little wiggle room there, huh?
That's a ka-ching. Yeah.
Yeah, ka-ching, ka-ching.
And see, the whole thing is, this is a solution that didn't work to solve a problem that didn't exist. You know, you could say that about all this renewable garbage, the wind, the solar, the electric cars, the electric school buses. It's a solution that does not work for a problem that never existed.
Right. Well, there's a guy in Louisiana, a superintendent, that got some of these school buses, 14 of them, in fact, and they're still new, because he's having difficulty finding companies that can repair them. So they're still new, sitting in the bus yard because, right?
Yep.
Yet another problem that they're having is there will be these things when you switch over to electric vehicles. For anyone who's thought the transition to an EV is easy and even profitable, it's yet another example that perhaps there will be big problems trying to do that switch over. There have been big problems for private ownership, people that have purchased an EV and then found out there's problems. We had a friend in Fallon who purchased one. Well, one of the problems is that they don't get as good as gas mileage, don't get as good as electric mileage going up and down mountains. And so he got worse gas mileage than he expected I shouldn't say gas mileage, but the electric ran out before he got to Reno coming from Fallon, and he thought he had enough to get in. And so he said, forget it. He sold his EV because it's not practical for him to have an EV out where he's driving around in the mountains. And
a solution that didn't work.
It's only a 60-mile trip from Fallon to Reno. And so he thought, well, with half of a charge on his EV, he should have been able to make it the 60 miles. Well, not so fast. It didn't happen for him. And so he said, well, I'm going back to gas. Maybe hybrids might work. I know we have a friend who has a hybrid. He's trying that out. And they charge themselves as they're running on the road. But still, as you said, it's something.
Well, you know, there's other costs. There's other things that has an end of the road. That's this segment. Mm-hmm. You know, because it goes for like 12 minutes and we're about there. So let's get a break in. And you are listening to and watching the Conservative Commanders Radio Show with Sharon Engel. I'm Rick Trader, and today's show, like each and every one of our shows, is being brought to you by the First Amendment, protected by the Second. You go nowhere, we'll be right back.
Are you tired of making trip after trip on doctor visits only to get wrong medications that waste time, money, and cause you side effects? If you're on Medicare, call for a free medical assessment and determine which medications are right for you based on your genetic makeup. With our convenient swab test performed in your home and mailed to our laboratory, no more trial and error. The results will tell you and your doctor which medications work for you. It's that easy. If you're on Medicare and take multiple medications, call now and see if you qualify for our genetic testing service covered by Medicare or your insurance. Improve your health, avoid adverse side effects, and save money. Don't wait. Call right now and find out if the medications you're taking are helping or hurting you. Make this free call right now.
Call 855-820-3291. That's 855-820-3291. Call 855-820-3291. That's 855-820-3291. Call 855-820-3291. That's 855-820-3291.
I hear every day about the products you all wish MyPillow carried. Well, guess what? We probably do. Slippers, bathrobes, pet beds, blankets, mattresses, sleepwear, loungewear, duvets, comforters, pot holders, aprons, oven mitts, and so much more. And they're all on sale. For example, get our best-selling standard MyPillows for only $14.98. Body pillows, $29.98. Six-piece bath towels or kitchen towel sets, just $29.98. Multi-use MyPillow 2.0s with pillowcase, $9.98. Save $40 on our Spring Percale and Giza Dream bed sheet sets. Any size, any color, and so much more. So go to MyPillow.com or call the number on your screen. Use your promo code to save up to 80% on all MyPillow products. And I've never done this before. When you spend $100 or more, you're going to get two standard MyPillows absolutely free.
To order, please call 800-797-7893 and please use the promotion code AUNTV. To order, please call 800-797-7893 and please use the promotion code AUNTV. To order, please call 800-797-7893 and please use the promotion code AUNTV. To order, please call 800-797-7893 and please use the promotion code AUNTV.
Welcome back to the Conservative Commandos with Sharon Engel, and I'm Rick Trader, coming to you from the MyPillow Studios, the MyStore Studios of our very own AUNTV network. Sharon, what else is filling up your radar screen?
Filling it up, it's a constant barrage here. The Democrats don't have anything. It's kind of a nothing burger over there on that Democrat side, and so yeah. they've flipped their stand on the Epstein files. They flipped it, right?
Well,
they were reluctant to release any of the Epstein files. They didn't want those to go out, and a lot of it had to do with their guys. You know, Clinton was part of that. We know that the Prince of England was
Andrew.
Yes,
Andrew.
He was involved. There was just a lot of stuff they didn't want to come out, and these guys are kind of all their friends, and so they didn't want to have it come out, and so that became the push. And they must be hiding something. So that was a push during the 2024 election. Was they must be hiding something? We're gonna get in there and find out what they're hiding. Well, as Trump has put his people on it, they're saying, you know, actually there wasn't anything to find. We've disclosed it. We've given it to you, and it's really, as they said, most of it came out right there in the beginning, and there's not anything else to really learn from those files. But they did put them out there, saying, you know, that there were 33,000 files that they put out there. You got them. But the Democrats are still not happy with this. This is the thing now that they've decided they're just going to sink their teeth into and ride it for all it's worth, and they had to flip to the full transparency. Well, we've never gotten full transparency from the Democrats on anything. Kind of an interesting political stand that they're making. Mm-hmm. Wait a second. Mm-hmm. You know, they flip-flopped here, and nobody's pointing that out, that there's a big flip-flop.
Well, I think there's a reason for flip-flop, and I'll tell you where I'm coming from. You remember that Brett Kavanaugh, right?
Yes.
Do you remember during his confirmation hearings, this woman come forward and saying that Brett Kavanaugh sexually harassed her or groped her or something at a party, and it was pretty well proven that this information was totally false. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, now from what I'm hearing is the women that were victims of Epstein's, whatever he did there, parties, rape, seduction, whatever. Well, they have, these women now, and I think there are like 30 of them that have come forward. They said they're going to compile their own list now. Uh-huh. So with that being said, Sharon, I will guarantee you, I will bet just about anything that on these lists, or some of these lists that are being compiled by these women who are quote unquote the victims of Epstein, I will guarantee you Donald Trump's name will come up on this.
Well, they've already tried not, to not make well his not name come
well
up.
this is different. There is no list. What is coming out now? There is no list. There is no Epstein list. But these women, these 30 women that have come forward, have gotten together and say, well, we're going to create a list. Mm. We're going to create a list. So I can guarantee you, Sharon, that on at least one of these lists, the name Donald Trump will be on it. The way Brett Kavanaugh was accused by, I forget her name. Do you remember her name, Sharon? Woman who accused Brett Kavanaugh. Maybe you could Google that while we're doing this little segment. My computer's running very badly today. Like, I can't even see you, as a matter of fact, right now. But I guarantee you that one of these lists will be constructed and it will contain the name Donald Trump on it.
Well, Christine Blasey Ford, or Blasey Ford.
There you go. Christine
is the woman that accused Brett Kavanaugh of sexual assault.
Right.
And that became a nothing, as you say. There was never anything really there. And she fabricated, right?
Well, what I'm saying is I guarantee you at least one of these women are going to fabricate a list and put the name Donald Trump on it. You know, Sharon, the Iranians have been a thorn in our side since 1979, thanks to Jimmy Carter. They continue to be a thorn in our side with their nuclear program and their hate of America. Sharon, these are just nasty, nasty, evil people. Maybe we're not talking about the people of Iran, as they say all the time, but certainly the heads of the government in Iran leave a lot to be desired.
Yeah, they do. And they are really not willing, I guess, to just call it quits on this war. They now are thinking of other ways to punish the West, I guess, is this idea. They have now arrested 53 Christians. They're doing it because they say they're spying from the Mossad. They're associated with Mossad, and they're the ones, right, that gave the
Mossad.
Gave the Mossad, which is Israel's CIA, gave them the look inside of Iran, so they knew where to attack and when to attack, what to attack, those things. That's what they're saying, that these Christians are the ones that are to blame for that. Mm-hmm. And their Christian population in Iran is only about 800,000. Many of them don't even have a church to attend. They are underground already. These are Christians who have no real Israeli ties. These are Christians that came out of Islam, that are Muslim converts. So they are traitors to Islam. And this is just a, to me, this is just a trumped up charge in order to do a genocide. That's kind of what these guys do, you know. They go in to get rid of people that don't agree with them.
Well, I'll tell you why this happens, Sharon. The same reason for in this country. You can't say anything negative about the Muslims, but you can sure say anything you want to negative about Christians. And I'll tell you why they get away with it. Because Christians are too nice. They don't fight back. They're not evil like the Muslims, like the Islamists are. You know, they don't kill, they don't go around killing people because of their religious belief is different. They don't go around killing people because it is their goal to erase Islam from the face of the earth. Christians are too damn nice. They are absolutely too nice. And maybe Christians needs to start being a little bit more militant. I don't know, Sharon. We tried turning the other cheek. And maybe in the end that'll work. I don't know. But I think Christians are too nice, too forgiving, too understanding.
These Christians that they're aiming at are Christians that have converted from Islam to Christianity. And they're more vulnerable to persecution and discrimination. The government controls their places where they think they live and are looking for them. But they have a certain anonymity in these urban areas because of the large populations there. So it's easier for them to kind of hide where they're at. However, they did go out of country. And when they did that,
what do you mean they went out of country?
It seems like they went to a conference of some kind. And the government picked up on it, and that's how they were arrested. That's how they found them, was they were coming back in country, and they had their Bibles, and then they were accused of smuggling Bibles in as well. So they confiscated their Bibles and their literature, and they were caught that way.
All I'm saying is, I really do believe, and I do believe throughout the world that Christians are too Christian. I think that look at this country, Sharon, look at this country, how Christians are persecuted compared to non-Christians. I mean, you can't say anything about the Muslims, you can't say anything about all these, you can't say anything about the black community, you can't say anything about the Hispanic community, you can't say anything about the Muslim, but Christianity, oh, you can go after that any way you want. You can't say anything negative about the homosexuals, but Christians, oh, you can attack them day and night and day and night. Do you know why? Because the attackers know the Christians won't do a thing. Won't do a thing about it.
Well,
I know you disagree with me, Sharon, But you know what? That
well,
disagreement
I don't think
will have
there's
to wait
any
for
such thing as being too Christian. How about that?
Well, you know what I say. Well, Sharon, we got to go to a break. I hate to do this. The old evil clock master is at it once again. And you're listening to Marching Conservative Commandos. I'm Rick Trader, my co-host Sharon Angle. Go nowhere. We'll be back right after this break.
Now you can leave home and leave the tanks behind with Inogen, the portable oxygen concentrator that moves with you.
This little box changed my life. I can now do all those things that I want to do. You just press the button here, and there's my oxygen.
Inogen portable oxygen systems are small and light and deliver up to 12 hours of medical-grade oxygen on a single charge.
Now that I've got my Inogen, I've got my freedom back. I'm back to living again.
Call us right now. Try an Inogen system for 30 days risk-free.
To order, call now, 800-604-3966. To order, call now, 800-604-3966. To order, call now, 800-604-3966.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, and I'm excited to announce my new product, My Coffee. I get products all the time from entrepreneurs for my new platform, MyStore.com. And when I tried My Coffee for the first time, I was blown away. It is the best coffee I've ever had in my life. I spent the last 4 months doing my due diligence, and this family-owned business micromanages every step from the fields to the cup to ensure the best quality coffee you're ever going to have. It starts with the beans that are grown in Honduras. Honduras's volcanic soil and humid climate make the perfect growing conditions for coffee plants, which produce the best beans ever. Then each batch is tested for its aroma, taste, and other aspects to meet the highest standards in the coffee industry. And after that, it goes into production, which is all done right here in the USA. It's like you're getting that small batch specialty coffee, but delivered right to your front door. So go to MyStore.com or call the number on your screen. Use the promo code and you'll get your very own My Coffee for 25% off. You guys all know that I've traveled the country for the past year and a half. I've stayed in hundreds of hotels. I've tried every coffee out there. Well, some of the coffees have that terrible aftertaste, some that leave me jittery, or I get an upset stomach. Well, My Coffee is different. It's the richest, smoothest, best coffee I've ever had. My Coffee comes in a variety of flavors. You get them ground or whole bean. Plus, it's certified organic and non-GMO. I guarantee it'll be the best coffee you've ever had. So go to MyStore.com or call the number on your screen. Use your promo code and you'll get My Coffee for 25% off. And I'm going to give you deep discounts on all My Store products. That's MyStore.com. It's my new platform for USA entrepreneurs. Please order now.
To order, please call 800-797-7893 and please use the promotion code AUNTV. To order, please call 800-797-7893 and please use the promotion code AUNTV. To order, please call 800-797-7893 and please use the promotion code AUNTV. To order, please call 800-797-7893 and please use the promotion code AUNTV.
And welcome back. Welcome back to Conservative Commandos. We're Sharon Angle and I'm Rick Trader. And we do have a couple of programming notes for you. One, right after this segment, we will be playing some of the best of interviews that we've done here on Conservative Commandos. Also, if you're listening to the show on one of our 18 radio stations or many internet broadcasts, you can watch us, as well as all the great shows that are part of the AUN-TV network. And the way to do that is go to AUN-TV.com, AUN-TV.com. Right below the banner, there's a red stripe that says Watch AUN TV Now. Click on it. It'll take you directly to our Rumble feed. So you can show, you see this show and Danessa Souza, Alan West, Tony Perkins, Roger Stone on all that great content right there. Also, right below that little stripe that says Watch AUN TV Live, there's another little thing that says Help AUN TV. Click on that. We still need 100 patrons to pledge $30 a month to keep this show and this network on the air. Just like PBS, just like NPR, we don't get any public funding. They don't either anymore. Ha, ha, ha. But we depend on listeners and viewers like you, just like they are now. Isn't it nice that they now know what it's like to beg and plead the way I am right now? But seriously, we do need 100 patrons to pledge $30 a month. It's only a dollar a day to keep this show in this network on the air. Again, go to our website, AUN-TV.com, AUN-TV.com. Click on that little link to Help AUN TV. All right, Sharon, where are we going?
Oh, we're going to a win in the courts for Trump. And that
I
is.
I love that part.
I know. It's
Leave
it's
it on
great.
A high note.
It's great when he gets an overturn. An Obama appointed judge. In the U.S. District Circuit, D.C. Circuit Court, said that $20 billion couldn't be frozen because it was needed. It's necessary. Let me tell you what the necessity was.
Yeah.
These funds were to be for the reduction of greenhouse gas emissions. So that's what they were doing. They were funneling these greenhouse gas emission monies, $20 billion, into some nonprofits just before Trump took office. And he says, no, that's not going to fly. And he froze it. And he shielded these $20 billion in climate-related grants. He said, we're not going to do that. And this judge says, oh, yes, you must. Well, they've overturned that and said, no, Trump is right. Trump is right.
Who overturned it? An appellate court? The Supreme Court? I mean, what court has now overturned it? Because it makes a difference. You know, if he goes to an appeals court, gets overturned, well, guess what? They could then appeal the appeal to a higher court.
And I'm sure they will, because it's an appeals court, three-judge panel. It's split 2-1. So they have an appeal there because one dissented, another Obama appointee dissented. Mm-hmm. And but this was the opinion of the ones who overturned it. We conclude the district court abused its discretion in issuing the injunction. The grantees are not likely to succeed on merits because their claims are essentially contractual, and therefore jurisdiction lies exclusively in the Court of Federal Claims. And while the district court has jurisdiction over grantees' constitutional claim, the claim is meritless. Moreover, the equities strongly favor the government, which on behalf of the public must ensure the proper oversight and management of this multi-billion dollar fund. The nonprofits that were set to receive this money included Coalition for Green Capital, Climate United Fund, Power Forward Communities, Opportunity Finance Network, Inclusive, and the Justice Climate Fund. Wow. You know, I've never heard of any of those.
But I'm sure,
and yet
I guarantee you.
They're receiving billions of dollars, and Opportunity Finance Network doesn't even sound like climate. It sounds like a real slush fund there.
Sharon, and I guarantee you, every one of these organizations had the solution to climate change. Every one of them had the solution to climate change. And without this $20 billion, we're all going to, I don't know, are we going to freeze to a crisp or burn to a crisp? I mean, which is it? Which is it this week?
Which is it?
Which well, is it this week?
I don't know. But the $20 billion now is looking for a home. The the administration is considering how to use that $20 billion.
How about give it back to the taxpayer? Give it back to the taxpayer. I think that's a better way. This is waste, fraud, and abuse. This $20 billion is nothing but waste, fraud, and abuse. And as you say, it was a gift from O'Biden on his way out the door. He didn't even know what he was doing. I guarantee there was some little idiot in the administration who put it in, who knew how to use the auto pen, and boof, $20 billion down the drain, down the drain. And Sharon, I say this all the time. The American people work hard for their money. They really work hard for the money. And to see it wasted, I'm calling this a total waste. Again, solutions that don't work for a problem that does not exist. And it's all to do one thing, Sharon, and you know this, Sharon. It's all to reward their cronies. They figured this game out. To use the public's money to bribe the public into electing them. That's what it's all about. That's why we're $38 trillion in debt. This money has been wasted, squandered by these people on their cronies to keep them in power and to keep them voting for them. And the shame of it is a lot of this cronied up money can never be taken back. You're never going to take away welfare. You're never going to take away food stamps. You're never going to take away public housing. You're never going to take away free cell phones. Because once these entitlements are in place, you can never take them back. For instance, in 1964, Lyndon Baines Johnson had a great idea because things were tough. Things were a little tough. And let's make it easier for people to put food on the table. So they come up with something called the food stamp program, which was only going to be for 6 months. Only going to be for 6 months. Guess what? How many years later, 51 years later, or 61 years later, we still got this food stamp program that was started in 1964 as a 6 month temporary program just to help mm-hmm. people out a little bit. Mm-hmm. This money has been squandered, it's wasted, it's gone. I'd rather see that $20 billion go back to the taxpayer. Cut taxes again.
Well, obviously, if we cut taxes again, our economy's gonna buzz more, because that's what happens, is it expands the economy. And with that expansion, then there's more money that comes in to pay down the debt. So
temporarily,
you're right. It's a
temporarily until the next Democrat administration comes in and raises taxes. Then all right. The good is going down the drain. And I always say this to people, will you learn from your lessons? Okay. Learn from your lessons by never voting for another Democrat again. Never vote for another rhino again, okay? Never vote for a Republican that says, oh, we need this program and that program. Baloney. You know what the federal government needs to do, Sharon? Protect us. A defense, a military, protect us. And in my opinion, that's all the federal government should be spending money on, and nothing else. Nothing else. Leave the rest to private enterprise.
So I wanted to conclude this with this undercover Project Veritas investigation that captured the EPA advisor Brent Efrain admitting that these payouts were deliberately accelerated. So here he says, this is a quote, it was an insurance policy against Trump winning. Efrain said in the recording, get the money out as fast as possible before the Trump administration comes in. It's like we're on the Titanic and we're throwing gold bars off the edge. So it was a deliberate attempt to get this money out the door before Trump won. And this, what they're calling a clawback, is what they've been doing all along. This is where Elon Musk started with these clawbacks. not necessarily with this particular 20 billion, but he had many of these earmarked. So at the end of the day, 20 billion here, 20 billion there, and pretty soon we're talking about real money. And that's my thought when it comes to this debt, is that we need to start talking about real money and looking at how to pull back from the extravagant spending that the Democrats have been doing.
Well, you know, Sharon, you talk about use the money to pay down the debt. Just the fact that they're pulling this money back is taking $20 billion off that debt.
Right.
You understand? Just pulling back that. Just pulling it back. Now, instead of using it for some other silly, ridiculous program, give it back to the taxpayer. Cut taxes again. With that, Sharon, guess what? We are up against it once again. Once again, we're up against the break, and you are listening to and watching the Conservative Commandos with Sharon Engel. I'm Rick Trader. Don't forget, on the other side of this break, we're going to be playing a couple of the best of interviews here on the Conservative Commandos radio show.
Okay.
Are you tired of seeing money all around the house? Then start saving money with First American Home Warranty. First American covers the systems and appliances you depend on every day. And if we can't repair your covered item, we'll replace it.
I've saved thousands, and that makes me happy.
All plans include a no-questions-asked money-back guarantee and flexible payment options so you can never pay for covered repairs again.
Call 1-800-402-7094. That's 1-800-402-7094. Call 1-800-402-7094. That's 1-800-402-7094.
And welcome back. Welcome back to the Conservative Commandos radio show. We share an angle, and yours truly, Rick Trader. And we are coming to you from the MyPillow Studios, the MyStore Studios of our very own AUN TV network. And Sharon, our first guest of the day is with us, and please make that introduction.
It's always my pleasure to introduce Timothy Head, who is the Executive Director for the Faith and Freedom Coalition. Tim has extensive media experience in over 100 outlets and publications such as Fox News, National Review, Christian Post, Washington Examiner, The Hill, The Jerusalem Post, and many more. And prior to joining Faith and Freedom, Tim worked in public policy as a district director for a member of the Texas congressional delegation. He also has served as chief of staff and policy advisors to members of the Texas legislature and worked in the Republican Party of Texas Victory Texas effort. Tim, welcome back to the Conservative Commandos radio show.
It's always great to be with you guys, and thanks for having us. And we're coming down the home stretch here. We just have a few more days. Just a few more days.
Yes, it's a week. It's a week as we speak. So it's kind of interesting. Faith and Freedom Coalition is breaking records now. And I know, and that's in the battleground states. I live in a battleground state. I live in Nevada. And we've seen your presence out here from the very beginning, since before the primary elections, and we're noticing it in our early voting turnout. It has far surpassed the records of past years, and I know that's because there's a lot of effort being put in by the Trump campaign and others, but I'm going to lay a lot of that at your doorstep, that you guys have been involved, that you've been working with the churches. That's been the main thrust of the Faith and Freedom Coalition. They've been saying, why aren't churches, they have a lot to lose, why aren't they involved? And we're speaking of the First Amendment. So with that, I'm going to let you, I've bragged the way I can. I want to have you tell us a kind of what the strategy was behind this, how you've been working in these battleground states, and really why it has been so successful.
Well, it's a great question, and thank you for pointing out those observations. It's always great for me personally and for our team to hear kind of first or secondhand reports, just like you just mentioned. I'll say, you know, one of the interesting pieces that we found over the years, I worked, as you mentioned, for members of the state legislature in Texas, worked for a congressional member in the state of Texas. And I wound up transitioning about 10 years ago to a nonprofit, of course, the Faith and Freedom Coalition, because I found not only in Texas, but in other states and now across the country that nonprofits have this ability to kind of continue to improve and kind of evolve over time. So even in a kind of a prolonged or protracted experience like a Donald Trump campaign, who obviously ran and won for 4 years, lost a race, continued for 4 years, and persists. But eventually, the Trump campaign will be no more. Frankly, next week, one way or the other. But nonprofits like the Faith and Freedom Coalition and others will continue. We were here before Trump. We'll be here after Trump. And that means that not only of our messages persist, but also our methodologies kind of get a little bit better every 2 years. So I think it's important to kind of highlight that because what you're talking about there in Nevada is we have kind of refined our processes over, I've been here for 10 years. Faith and Freedom has existed about 15, a little over 15 years now. And so we certainly still knock doors. The records I think you're alluding to, we have hit over 9 million doors now. I think that that either on Monday or maybe on Election Day next Tuesday, we'll actually should surpass a 10 million door threshold, which is, that sounds like a big number. But it's even hard to kind of articulate that. That's the largest number of a nonprofit of kind of a parallel advocacy organization as far as we can tell in American political history. Wow. And so, generally you have like major campaigns or presidentials, major parties, national parties. But frankly, the Faith and Freedom Coalition has become kind of a political entity unto itself. And so as we mobilize and educate people of faith, particularly Christian and Catholic voters, we believe that, so just numerically, those two together are the largest political constituency in all of American politics. Between the two, about 26-27% evangelicals and about 10 or 11% are self-identified Catholic, conservative Catholics. So 36-37% of all, not Republican, of all voters fall into those categories. And we're seeing more and more turnout for those, and those voters are going more and more for the pro-life, pro-faith, pro-family candidates. And frankly, it's moving the needle. And the last piece I'll allude to that is very important. It seems kind of like a whittling around the edge a bit, but voting early, it's not just a matter of kind of convenience or preference. What it does is it allows campaigns and the nonprofits like ours the ability to kind of see who is voting. And once people are kind of coming off, they're voting and they're coming off of the voter rolls, it allows us every night we're in contact with the Secretary of State's office in states across the country, Nevada, but really 24 states we're working in this cycle. So every night we get an update. We don't know how people are voting, but we do know who's voting every night, every day, and we get an update that night. And it allows us to kind of customize and whittle our outreach experiences to chase or kind of like pursue the kind of later voters, I guess you could say. But the more the better, truly. And I'm thankful now that conservative voters are starting to kind of get the memo, get the message that it's really, really important to participate early, not only for your own individual sake, but for really kind of for the whole collective effort writ large.
Well, we saw the Christian coalition, if you will, or the Christian right really band together, starting with Reagan. And it was kind of an organic thing, but now it's more of a political, let's refine this thing. And I have to tell you, on my cell phone, I'm being chased because I haven't voted yet. I always vote on Election Day, and it has helped me to see the way that this campaign is moving as far as chasing those voters, those late voters. So you're exactly right. That's what's happening. It's not just getting the vote out, but chasing the vote, as you said, making sure that those that we know should be voting with us are voting. The other thing that I've noticed in my, in Reno, that's where I live, in my hometown, is the number of pastors now that have awakened to this idea that I can't just sit on the sidelines during elections. I need to make a statement, and I need to know how to make that statement. And that's one of the things that Faith and Freedom has done, is worked with pastors on refining their statements so they don't get crossways with the government. They don't have somebody come in and give them a hard time about their 501c3, but they also know that that some of that is just plain lying and actually coercion, a form of extortion. If you don't do it our way, we'll take whatever. So would you go into that a little bit, just how you've been able to interface with pastors and get them to stand courageously in their pulpit and say, we have to vote the Bible, vote our values?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So in the 60s, Lyndon B. Johnson put in place what's now become come to be known as the Johnson Amendment, which ironically, in that era, the Catholic Church, a handful of bishops and rectors in the Catholic Church spoke pretty directly against Johnson on a couple of different issues. And so he put in place this this piece that basically prohibited or at least limited political speech by churches. And so the IRS likes to kind of send around notices in the last few weeks before each election saying, hey, 501c3, particularly churches, just remember that you can't, make political statements from the pulpit or what have you. And but they don't really kind of fill in the rest of the sentence that's since the 60s. So we're almost exactly at 60 years now since that was put in place. Only one church has ever actually had their C3 status removed. It was in the 80s, and that was a pretty egregious, I will admit, effort. I mean, they basically were running a political campaign out of their church. but since then, literally for over half a century, nobody's actually lost their 501c3 status. So churches can actually say and do a lot more, like a lot more than a lot of pastors and bishops believe. And so thankfully, I think more and more, again, church leaders across the country are getting the memo and frankly, they probably even could endorse a candidate. We at Faith and Freedom don't necessarily suggest that, but we do suggest very strongly that they should be educating their parishioners or their members where candidates stand on issues, particularly biblically relevant issues, and then just urge people to vote and get them registered to vote, early in the process, and then make sure when it's actually voting time that nobody's sitting on the sidelines, that everybody's fully engaged and fully participating. And I think that those are very easy, very safe things that churches can do, which is exactly, those are the resources that we try to provide for churches, is exactly that. Vote, and here's where candidates stand on issues.
And I have a couple of those right here that I picked up in church this Sunday. And they actually compare party platforms, and then they go down the list of candidates and the issue and where that candidate stands on those values issues. I have watched, though, churches have a, and I guess I want your opinion on this, churches have a visibility within their neighborhoods. And I've seen, my pastor said, a guy came in and he says, I want to put a sign on your lot here. Is that okay? And he said, let's talk a minute. Found out the guy lined up with him and he said, sure, put that sign up. So in a way, it's not an endorsement, but it is, this is a values candidate. Is that what it says, or is that an endorsement?
Well, it's a good question. I think the answer is that it would not be considered or construed to be an endorsement. Really, you're just kind of providing any more than essentially allowing somebody to speak, you know, from a pulpit it would not necessarily be considered a legal endorsement. But you're certainly lending, if you will, kind of your platform, or at least kind of a window of your program, the time that you have, you're allocating some of that time and some of that platform to a particular message or messenger. And so I think that, but again, those are completely valid kind of legal uses. And then you can kind of ask other questions on whether it's useful, effective, or like politically effective, and then also whether, you know, any of the kind of ancillary detractions that might come from it in a community. You know, every church and pastor has to kind of make their own analysis from that vantage point. But again, our position is that we try to get as many resources, as much information as possible to church leaders, and then just kind of urge people to maybe go a little bit further than they've gone in the past, just to make sure again that people get information, that parishioners get information, and that we're getting more and more people engaged and not just kind of complaining at home.
Well, I know Pastor Jack Hibbs, in making his congregation available and encouraging his congregation to actually be proactive within their community, what he was able to accomplish and their church was able to accomplish there in Liberal California was during the COVID year, they did not close their church. They were not bothered by elected officials because they'd made friends with those officials, and those officials were really very pro that church because they knew there were going to be votes coming out of that church for them. And so they were inclined to listen to the argument that said we need to keep our program open, even though the whole nation pretty much was saying, no, you can't do that. So I know there is a benefit beyond the election for the church that gets involved in the community in ways that actually influence those that are making policy. And with that, we have to go to our commercial. Doggone it. Sometimes,
well, Sharon,
I get on,
if you want to continue your thoughts.
I'm on a roll. No, I'm going to let you have your chance. I just wanted to say that. We are going to our break here. We are coming to you from the Commandos Radio Network studios and around the world on the internet with TalkStream Live, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, NetTalk America, and AM FM 24/7. I'm Sharon Engel here with my co-host, Rick Trader, and we've been talking with our special guest, Timothy Head, who is with us here representing, as their executive director, the Faith and Freedom Coalition. We've been talking about how their strategy has been working in the battleground states, and we'll be right back to continue that discussion.
What if you could whiten your teeth by simply brushing your teeth? Now you can with Smile Actives, the teeth whitening breakthrough that safely gets your teeth white and keeps them white every day just by brushing your teeth.
I never thought that whitening my teeth could be so easy. I just put the gel on the brush, the toothpaste on it, brush, and I can see my white teeth.
Simply add Smile Actives to any toothpaste, and our patented PolyClean technology activates into a powerful microfoam that penetrates into the enamel surface to safely lift and remove stains.
You need a simple way to whiten your teeth. Without strips, without trays, without going to the dentist. And it was about time that a product was developed that you would be able to do that with just brushing.
And now Smile Actives is even better with new Pro Whitening Gel with 33% greater whitening power, clinically shown to whiten teeth faster, up to 8 shades. 100% of users saw whiter teeth on food stains, coffee and wine stains, even on veneers, crowns, and dentures.
I eat the blueberries, I drink the coffee, and I know that Smile Actives will keep my teeth white every day.
If you could use something so easy like Smile Actives to take yellow teeth to white teeth, why wouldn't you?
Why spend hundreds of dollars for whitening treatments at the dentist when now you can whiten your teeth with new Smile Actives Pro Whitening Gel every time you brush your teeth? Call or go to SmileActives.com. And for a limited time, get new Pro Whitening Gel for just $24.95. Order in the next 5 minutes and buy one, get one absolutely free for just $24.95. That's two for one. And save 58%. We'll even include free shipping. Get your teeth whiter guaranteed or return it within 60 days for your money back.
I smile every day now.
The difference is literally night and day.
So now I'm always smiling, always choosing, because now my teeth are much whiter.
This offer is not available in stores, so call or click now before the special buy one, get one free offer goes away.
To order, call 800-894-0493. 800-894-0493. 800-894-0493.
And welcome back. Welcome back to the Conservative Commandos Radio Show with Sharon Angle and yours truly, Rick Trader, coming to you from the MyPillow Studios, the Maestro Studios of the AUN TV network. And if you'd like to see the shows like The Stone Zone with Roger Stone, Danessa Souza's podcast, The Joe Messina Show, More Money with Stephen Moore, James O'Keefe Media, Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, Colonel Alan West, Steadfast and Loyal. Hey, all those great shows and more right here with the Conservative Commandos on the AUN TV network. I want to thank our guests for sticking with us. And as Timothy Head, he's the Executive Director of the Faith and Freedom Coalition. And we're discussing their efforts to get out the vote. And hey, Tim, thank you for holding through that break. We really, really, really do appreciate your time. Hey, Tim, what is your message? When Faith and Freedom goes out and talks to people, what is their message? And how is the message coming from a nonprofit? How is it received differently than a message coming from a particular or any particular campaign?
Yeah, good question. Well, you know, clearly campaigns can be built around policies or principles, and either explicitly or implicitly they almost always are. But you know, clearly campaigns are also built around personalities, and it's a very natural thing to happen. It should happen. But I think one of the important elements of nonprofit advocacy organizations is they're not necessarily built around an individual person or a personality. They really are kind of built on or focused around advancing certain principles and values. And that's really kind of what Faith and Freedom is built to do, is not to advance one personality, one person, one viewpoint even, but really a collection or a cadre of issues that we believe are biblically based. You know, sometimes the way we like to say it is that we espouse policies from a biblical worldview within a constitutional framework. And so, you know, I think that's kind of the core mission, if you will, for us at Faith and Freedom is to champion not only those values or those principles, but then also to find candidates who are in agreement with those, whether that be on the federal side, you know, clearly at the presidential level, U.S. Senate, U.S. House, and then governors on the state levels, governors, state Senate, state House, judges in a decent number of states run for office, you know, across the gambit. We're looking for people to be in office that align with and will actually protect or advance those policy, those principles that we believe are really kind of their bedrock kind of core principles of what has made America, you know, through almost 250 years now, the America that we know today. And that tends to, those biblical values tend to bring about a flourishing family, a freer society, and really becomes a blessing not only to that country, but frankly beyond the borders of that country.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up, especially about the down ballot, Tim, you know, because I think obviously everyone is so focused on the presidential campaign, they forget about the down ballot and how important that the House and the Senate is going to be to any president. And I believe I believe those races are as important as the race for the presidency. Tim, I want to talk about the elephant in the room, or should I say the elephant and the donkey in the room. You've got these two presidential candidates, Kamala Harris Well, I haven't heard her talk a lot about her faith. And then you've got Donald Trump. And I'd love to say in this, on the show that Donald Trump may be an imperfect man, but he's perfect. I think he's perfect for what this country needs. Over the past few months, we've seen a couple of assassination attempts. And I believe in divine intervention. I really do. I believe in the divine, how divine intervention has affected this country going all the way back to the Revolutionary War, and how George Washington was unscathed through that war, and so many times little quirks saved his army. Do you see, when you're out there talking to people, that they're also talking about these elephants in the room? Well, Kamala Harris never talks about her faith, but Donald Trump is such an imperfect man. What's your take on those conversations? Are you seeing it out there?
Have those conversations quite a bit, and frankly, have had them for, you know, since back in 2016. I think it's no big secret that like you said, that Donald Trump is not a saint. He's certainly has made his share of mistakes, as we all have. Mm-hmm. And so I think that the reality is that while that may be true on a personal level, he also is, either ironically or maybe not so ironically, has also delivered actually more true and kind of sustained victories on the policy front than frankly any other president who may have inculcated our values maybe in their own lives a little more obviously. But frankly, weren't quite as effective in delivering on advancing, true victories and kind of points on the board, so to speak. So I actually think in an interesting way, it's made a lot of probably Americans, period, but especially Americans of faith, to kind of like do a little bit of a recalculation almost of sorts of like, wow, I wonder if there's something to be learned here that. You know, that people that I might have gone to church with in the past, or maybe even taught a Sunday school class, you know, that have been in the White House didn't deliver, but somebody that was, probably less living the life on the straight and narrow have actually delivered more on what we have been wanting to see. So, you know, it'd be great if you could have kind of the best of both worlds. But I think that those almost maybe a little bit of an axiom to be found in that, a truism to be found in that, sometimes people that he may not have always felt like he could, that Christians just assumed that he was good for their issues. And so I think Trump may have even been more motivated to deliver instead of just kind of talking the talk, but not necessarily walking the walk. Quickly, I'll just add, you know, the questions that you had about divine intervention and his life being spared. Ironically, just yesterday here in Atlanta, Georgia, we had a rally with almost 3,000, probably 2,700 or 800 faith leaders in from not just Georgia, but frankly throughout the Southeast. And he talked for close to an hour, did a little interview on stage, and talked a lot about not only his personal faith, his history, kind of growing up in churches, etc. But he did talk about particularly the Butler, Pennsylvania piece, and how that really, it's impossible for it not to make a profound impact on his own life, and certainly the life of and kind of perspectives of his family. So I'm certainly thankful on a interpersonal level that those efforts were unsuccessful. But I think that a lot of people have kind of looked in from the outside, so maybe there is a certain kind of element of destiny in this that maybe what God is trying to accomplish may actually be more fully accomplished through a Trump presidency, a second term for a Trump presidency. So there definitely is that's a percolating conversation, no doubt about it.
Tim, you've been working on these campaigns, or working around, not working in, but working around Donald Trump campaigns, as you say, going back to 2016. Do you see a change in this man, especially since Butler, PA?
Well, you know, I think that he's. I do think that there seems to have been a bit of a self-reflection, you know, there of and you know, so look, I think humility is an interesting thing, and I think that that people can be kind of demure, but not necessarily humble, and I actually also think that people can be pretty outspoken, but also have certain elements of humility. And so I don't think of humility as kind of self-abasement. I think of humility as thinking more about other people than you think about yourself, just like focused more on other people. And I think that he's very focused on what he can do for other people. I think there's an element of him wanting to kind of set the record straight. He shouldn't have lost in 2020, and he wants to make amends, if you will, for that. But I really think that he's going about this whole exercise trying to help people, to help a nation, to help the world in certain contexts. But I don't think that this really is about, the scoreboard for Donald Trump. I think that he's fully engaged in this process to try to help as many people as possible. And that's the way that he sees that. And frankly, I think that, you know, he kind of alluded to that a little bit in the interview on stage yesterday, as he said, you know, maybe God wants me to be in the White House again because he has some things for me to do while I'm there. You know, so I think that was encouraging and kind of peeling the onion back a little bit and giving a bit of an insight into where he's coming from, that it's not just kind of like, you know, so his legacy of greatness is expounded.
Timothy Head, Executive Director of Faith and Cooper Coalition. Tim, one more question. Do you ever think you'd live to see the day when the Amish have a Trump parade with horse and buggies? And the reason I point that out is I see things like that, and I hear homilies and sermons where I think ministers are actually leading their flocks, not telling them who to vote for, but to tell them what to vote for, what should be important to them. Do you see the same thing, Tim?
It's really been, I'd say that the last 10 years, you know, eight to 10 years have been, it's been a fascinating vignette in American political history, that we've continued to see a ratchet up and more people of faith voting, which is very encouraging to me, kind of in a very macro sense. Exactly what we've been talking about, you know, for the last few minutes, we're seeing more and more.
Is that Christian, because they're seeing faith and religion on the ballot?
It's definitely kind of front and center, and I think that there's been more recognition of that. And frankly, you know, unfortunately, because some of that has been restricted, I think most people didn't think that it could be or ever would be restricted. And I think that some people have been surprised to see, oh my gosh, like this can either be frustrated or potentially even eliminated in some places. And so more and more people, I think, you know, not just kind of pastors and faith leaders, but even just kind of lay members are saying, you know, this is a big deal. And we actually have seen that if the wrong people are in the wrong place, that there are no guarantees that this is going to be here forever. And so I think a lot more people are taking not only, you know, matters into their own hands around life but Israel, I think, is a big, big deal. It's becoming an even bigger deal. And then similarly, I think religious liberty, you know, when you see it infringed in some places, you think this is a very thin veneer, and that there's no kind of inevitability to this. It really does have to be protected and treated very delicately.
Well, Tim, we are one week away from the presidential election. When do we start ramping up for 2026 and 2028? And with that being said, how can our listeners and viewers connect with the Faith and Freedom Coalition, and how can they get in on your team?
Yeah, great question. So, we kind of have the joke at Faith and Freedom Coalition is we have a special name for the day after an election here at Faith and Freedom Coalition. It's just called Wednesday. It just keeps going for us. This is a 24/7 kind of 365 exercise that, You know, we really won't take a break. We won't pause for, you know, catch our breath and either, you know, mourn or celebrate. We just kind of keep going. And so fcoalition.com is our website, and that has links to all of our social media activity. as soon as this as the election's over, obviously, you know, Congress will kick in January, but so will state legislatures across the country. We're going to be lobbying in over half the state legislatures across the country on issues related to life, marriage, religious liberty. Israel is becoming even a little bit of a state level issue from time to time. Education, immigration, human trafficking, the criminal justice system, all of these things have kind of tethers to the biblical worldviews. And so, you know, we'd love certainly for people to be engaged. We have state chapters now in 24 states across the country. And yeah, we just kind of, you know, keep on keeping on. So our goal by the end of next year is to have 27 or 8. We're on our way to 30, and eventually we want state chapters in all 50 states, and I think we're going to get there probably in the next 4 or 5 years.
Timothy, hey, give out that website, please.
It's just ffcoalition.com, just ffcoalition.com.
Timmy, you know, I think that people have to understand that next Tuesday is not the end of the war. It's not even the end of the battle, that this is a continuous struggle against the evil left. It really do. Timothy Head, again, we want to thank you so much for joining us. Take care and God bless.
Thank you and God bless.
And you are listening to and watching The Conservative Commanders with Sharon Angle, and I'm Rick Trader. On the other side, we're going to have Bill DiAugustino from the Media Research join us, Media Research Center join us, and we're going to talk about the preferential treatment that Kamala Harris is getting, not so much for Donald Trump. Don't go away. We'll be right back with our next guest.
This right here is confidence in a bottle. It
makes me feel so much more confident than I've ever felt.
They are some of the hottest videos on social media, those videos claiming to instantly get rid of bags under your eyes. Annette Figueroa is here to tell us why she says this one is for real.
This one is for real, and I'm so excited. We even have a video, and all he uses is a small amount on a clean, dry face. And what it does is it tightens and lifts the appearance of bags underneath your eyes. And I did this to my father. We were at home, so we applied it to his under eye bags, and let me tell you, we were so excited. In under 10 minutes, they visibly disappeared from view, and now it is literally part of both of our daily routines. And not only does it work on the bags, it works on the appearance of crow's feet, fine lines, and wrinkles.
At our $14.95 price, it's the best way to try Plexiderm and see it work after your first application. Your solution is at PlexidermTrial.com or call the number on your screen.
To order, call 800-684-0144, 800-684-0144, 800-684-0144.
And welcome back. Welcome back to the Conservative Commanders Radio Show with Sharon Engel and yours truly, Rick Trader. And we are coming to you from the MyPillow Studios, the MyStore Studios of our very own AUN-TV network. And hey, Sharon, our next guest is aboard with us, and please make that introduction.
Well, it's my pleasure to always introduce those who have partnered us with the Media Research Center, and today is no different. We have wonderful Bill DiAugustino with us. He's the research analyst for the Media Research Center's News Analysis Division. He's previously worked as a video editor for production studio in New York. His work has been featured on Fox News, Drudge Report, The Daily Caller, and other conservative outlets. Bill, welcome back to the Conservative Commandos Radio Show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, if I seem kind of excited to talk about the media, I am. We're seeing some kind of interesting things happen. LA Times is not gonna endorse Kamala. And yep. Washington Post says, not gonna endorse Kamala. And yet, the TV seems to not have gotten the message. They're still really banging away on Trump and giving Kamala 78% positive press. What's the disconnect on the media here? Some of them are saying, nope, we can't touch that. And others are saying, it's full steam ahead. We're going to keep with our agenda.
Well, I would argue that you shouldn't be too quick to trust anything to change at the LA Times or the Washington Post. The lack of an endorsement, if you were to read Jeff Bezos's op-ed that he wrote in the Washington Post, I was a little surprised to see conservatives heaping as much praise on it as they were, because if you actually drill down on what he's really saying there,
maybe because they didn't read it.
That's right. Yeah,
they just
right.
saw the headline, Bill, and they didn't read the op-ed.
That's right. Basically, I assume that's the case, because he bemoans the lack of trust that Americans have in the media. At no point does he suggest that any of that lack of trust might be earned in some way. He makes no concession to the existence of bias, and in fact only just bemoans the appearance of bias or the perception of bias. He asserts that all of the journalists at the Washington Post deserve to be believed, and says he's going to try to do what he can to earn people's trust back. The whole thing felt a little bit like if somebody were to cheat on their spouse for like 10 years and then send their spouse a text saying, hey, I'm sorry that you think I did that. Right? That was kind of the vibe that I got from the whole piece. So I wouldn't be too hasty to suspect that Washington Post, certainly not the LA Times or really any other newspaper, are going to change their tack too much. I think it's just the appearance that an endorsement grants, or the appearance of an endorsement of any political candidate, I think is just being seen by the people running things there as a bridge too far. But their reporting's still going to be, I assume, just as stilted as it always is.
Well, it's kind of interesting. It's kind of freaked the left out, though, that they didn't get the endorsements that they expected. Michelle Obama, for one, she says, oh, my gosh, how could you desert us?
Right. Yeah. And it's funny, right, because the media basically want everybody to be in 100% complete lockstep with each other. Right. This is not the Washington Post saying, oh, okay, we're actually endorsing Donald Trump, or hey, we're going to start reporting on the crimes of illegal aliens a lot more, and we're axing the entire pro-choice staff. You know, it's nothing like that, right? It's just that they are not bending a knee to the Kamala Harris campaign. That alone, even if the reporting stays the same, that alone is grounds for massive resignations at the Post, for tons of other outlets to slam them for cowardice, for not endorsing Kamala. They truly have zero tolerance for even an iota of dissent. And I always enjoy moments like this because they're very illustrative of that fact. And I think it wakes a few people up each time it happens.
Yeah, even one of their stellar supporters said, no, I'm canceling my subscription. I can't deal with this. It's just amazing that any tremors in the force over there is just a total freak out. I don't know how else to describe it.
Yeah, every tremor is an 8 on the Richter scale for them. It's absolutely true.
The other thing that I thought was kind of funny is that they're starting now to make some really satirical remarks. It seems like everything seems to be pointing to a win for Trump if the election stays fair and honest.
And that's right. And that's always a big if, unfortunately, Sharon, these days.
And the satirists now are saying, well, even Biden voted for Trump when he went to vote.
You know, I think that might be the most universally made joke in America. When I jokingly remarked that to a friend when I first saw that photo, and he said, "Oh my God, I just said the same thing to somebody when I saw the photo of him leaving the voting booth." And yeah, now there's a bunch of TV comedians saying it as well. I think that everybody arrived at that joke simultaneously, just because we've seen Biden's antics over the last couple of weeks. He's sort of thrown Kamala under the bus. Now she doesn't even want him campaigning for her. Her campaign said that he would be a liability on the trail. So yeah, it's hard. It's hard not to enjoy it a little bit when you watch something like that going on.
Well, and I've seen them kind of Debbie in a conversation between Obama and Joe. He's, you know, is she going to make it? Joe says, and Obama says no, and he says, well, maybe I should come back. And he says, not a chance, Joe. You know, I'm kind of condensing that conversation, but it is the laughing stock. The left has now gone from serious to satirical to comical, it seems like, in this last few
days. Desperation will do that to you, you know?
Yeah, I guess so. It just seems like they would try to retrieve this some way, and I don't see that. I don't see them going back on anything. It seems like we're still sold out. The media is still sold out. It's kind of scary to watch kind of fervor.
It would appear that they're just doubling down harder and harder on their, what seems to be anyway, their closing argument, which is essentially Donald Trump is Hitler, he's a Nazi, maybe his supporters are Nazis too, depends what day you ask them and who you ask. To your point that you made earlier, before I got us off topic a little bit on the Washington Post, the television outlets do not seem to have gotten the memo as much. And they are more than happy to help the Harris campaign broadcast this message. I don't know if you saw, did you see some of the chyrons that were being aired, particularly on CNN and MSNBC during that Madison Square Garden rally? The chyrons were directly comparing the rally to the 1939 Nazi party or American Nazi party, whatever it was, rally that apparently in their minds is the only political event that has happened at MSG between then and now, right? It's not like the Democratic National Convention was held there multiple times. It's not like Bill Clinton accepted the Democratic nomination at Madison Square Garden to a massive crowd, right? It's just Madison Square Garden was closed down for 85 years. The Nazi Party had a rally there, then it closed for 85 years, and then Trump came in and said, hey, you know what Hitler did? I'll do the same thing. Oh, Hitler wasn't even there. It was the American Party, but whatever.
Yeah. It has been amazing to me to watch the commercials as well that are coming out and how solidly they are pushing this reproductive rights thing. It just is almost the only thing you see coming out of the left, and it's all the way down the ticket.
Yeah, that, and they're also supposedly running a bunch of ads on, shall we say, adult websites trying to scare young men into believing that Trump is going to ban all adult websites, and now they have Tim Walz trying to reach out to men by streaming himself playing video games, and so I think it was Peter Hassan who said it was one of the Hassan brothers. So forgive me if it was John. I'm sorry, guys. But he said very very succinctly, the Harris campaign is now essentially the party of abortion, weed, porn, and video games. That's what it is.
Yeah, and it looks that way to us that are just sitting on our couch watching, and all of a sudden this commercial comes up, and you go, you know, you watch it once because you're interested to see what they're actually saying. You watch it twice because you're angry, and now you're picking up the lies. And by the third time, you're muting it and saying, I don't want to watch that anymore. It's just awful. You guys over there at the Media Research Institute must be going... you're used to it.
We get very no used pulling. To hearing idiocy. I mean, you know, I cut my teeth on Morning Joe when I was an intern here years ago. I watched Morning Joe, and then in the afternoon I would watch Deadline White House. So, I mean, you know, at this point I feel like I could
and you're still with
watch
you
just about anything.
Well, I still have hair. He hasn't pulled it all out.
You're still with us? You didn't hang yourself yet?
No, I mean, you know, I've talked off the ledge a few times, but, you know, before that, actually, even that felt easy. I was, because before that, my job right before was interning on the Hill for a senator, and this was right after the Trump inauguration. It was in a purple state, And we were getting so many phone calls from angry Democratic constituents just to complain about Donald Trump, essentially, which, I mean, look, the senator couldn't do anything about Donald Trump being president, right? But they needed to complain. And we were getting so many calls from constituents that we couldn't do any other intern duties, right? So there was very little legislative work, very little anything else other than just essentially having my ear shouted off by upset Southern Democrats for 8 hours a day. And so then just getting to sit in an air conditioned room and watch Morning Joe, that felt easy. And now I'm past that. And I'm older than I was. I chalk it up to that, right? That and the hazard pay that I get now. So.
Well, it certainly has the whole campaign, even though we're just a week out now and pretty much wrapping up, it seems like the October surprise is kind of a implosion from the left. They seem not to be able to run through their game. They're kind of splintering. It seems like it's that the surprise is on them. They can't keep their well-oiled machine oiled.
Right. I think that somebody at the Harris campaign missed the memo. The October surprise is it's not supposed to be a surprise gift. But hey, I mean, I like nice surprises as much as the next guy. So, okay, if that's the path they've chosen. And I will say, I mean, I'm the constant doom and gloom guy who's having to be kind of rehabilitated by my friends routinely and told, shut up, you're being negative. But I've got to say, if you look at the early vote numbers that you're seeing, and especially some of the analyses of projected election day vote cannibalization from some of these early voting states, like Pennsylvania specifically, the election day vote cannibalization rate seems to be in the single digits. And so that it would appear then that a lot of these early votes that we're seeing for Republicans are actually either new voters or just not people who would have voted on election day in 2020 regardless. And so that, you know, it's always too soon. It's always too soon until we've forced Steve Kornacki at MSNBC to admit who the winner is. But but it does seem like a good sign right now. So that's as far as I'll go.
Well, and I guess I'm sitting right in your seat with you because, you know, I see it from Nevada and we're cautiously optimistic.
I mean, that's what
we would say here.
Clark County, for God's sake. I mean, like you guys are within striking distance of the Democrat vote in 2020 in Clark County, which is remarkable.
Remarkable, yes.
I don't really know what to make of it other than, you know, then I look at who the Democrats are running and I say, well, okay.
Could it possibly be no tax on tips?
Could be a big part of it. I mean,
you know, Las Vegas, Casino City, those dealers, they work on tips. The majority of them money is made on tips. So Trump's pledge, no tax on tips. Well, gets that. And then he says, we're not going to tax Social Security, so that gets all the seniors that have moved to Las Vegas, you know.
Right, and so all the dealers and retirees craftsmasters, they're all like, okay, well, I know who I want.
Yeah,
that's a great take. That's a guy. Well, I didn't think about that, Rick.
Same thing in Reno. Sharon, isn't Reno also a casino town?
Oh, absolutely. Every town in Nevada has a casino. That's just kind of a given. That's why we have good meals. Any place in rural Nevada, you can get a good meal because the casinos want you to eat there and then, of course, stay on and do a little gaming. But, it's absolutely a tip every place. You know, the restaurants are a tip. The casinos are a tip. We live on tips here. And so that's a good play. It's a play. It's a good play. But, again, gosh, I'm with you. You have to be kind of cautiously optimistic because we know what has happened in the past. So with that, we're going to go to a commercial break. We are coming to you from the Conservative Commandos Radio Network studios and around the world on the internet with TalkStream Live, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, NetTalk America, and AM FM 24/7. I'm Sharon Angle here with Rick Trader. My co-host, we've been talking with our guest, Bill DeAugustino, who is the research analyst for the Media Research Center's News Analysis Division. He's been talking to us about the TV hits that Trump has been taking, 85% negative news versus 78% positive press for Harris. So we'll continue this conversation on the other side.
Are you having trouble hearing your TV or listening to conversations in loud spaces? Then it might be time to consider Nano hearing aids. The days of expensive hearing aids are over. Nanos are FDA-registered OTC hearing aids. They are powerful, lightweight, and simple to use. And their tiny in-ear design makes them nearly invisible. Plus, they are rechargeable, saving you hundreds of dollars on batteries. Don't be fooled by overpriced hearing aids. Prescription hearing aids could cost $3,000 or more. Nano hearing aids are only $397. But wait, we are so confident you are going to love your Nanos, we are offering $100 off through this special TV offer. Call now and get two CIC rechargeable hearing aids for only $297. You get a free portable charging case, free 24/7 lifetime telephone support, free shipping, and a 45-day money-back guarantee.
Call 855-690-6464. That's 855-690-6464. Call 855-690-6464. That's 855-690-6464.
And once again, we do want to welcome you back to the Conservative Commanders Radio Show with Sharon Engel and yours truly, Rick Trader, coming to you from the MyPillow Studios and MyStore Studios of the AUN TV network. Bill DiAugustino is our guest. He's a research analyst for the Media Research Center's News Analyst Division, and we're talking about media coverage during this campaign. You know, I used to think, what a job, to get a job at the Media Research Center and sit around and watch TV day after day, hour after hour. And Bill, I don't know if it was you when you were on with us in September, or if it was Dan or Eric, or said, wait a minute, you know, a lot of stuff that we have to watch is the propaganda coming from the left. And you have in this news release, MRC has analyzed 660 stories. Now, my wife will tell you, I'm constantly at the TV. And every time a Kamala Harris ad comes on, I go bonkers. I mean, I'll tell you, I'd be in a white suit if I had to sit there and watch 660 stories, most of them positive towards Kamala Harris. Bill, yeah, I take it back. I never would want to work for the Media Research Center. And God bless you guys for doing it.
It's not quite as bad as it sounds. We do a lot of, for the study specifically, I didn't work on this one. It was the great Rich Noyes, our former research director, who I could only hope to be as good of an analyst as him someday. But most of what we do for our methodology.
No wonder he's not at MRC full time anymore.
Yeah. It was too much. It was too much for him. He started getting a skin condition from it. Yeah, no, it's a
heartbreak of psoriasis.
Yeah, no, he looks great. We mostly go through transcripts. Although unfortunately it seems they're hell bent on torturing us, these broadcast networks, because they've become less and less compliant with their Nexus transcript uploading as time has worn on. And a couple of networks have now stopped entirely uploading their transcripts. And so we have to go and watch our recordings of the full broadcast, which we do anyway. We compare them to the transcripts. Right. But it's in a more analytical manner. But when you don't have a transcript in front of you, you really have to sit down and slowly go through and listen to everything. And yeah, that's tough. Right. That's no fun at all.
Well, Bill, maybe they caught on to you guys.
I wonder sometimes.
And don't put out transcripts because they know what the Media Research Center will do with them.
Right. They've got somebody there behind a keyboard saying, like, you know, what's the point of transcribing all this if they're just going to use it to make us look bad? I'm not doing this anymore.
Right.
You know, that's my guess.
Hey, Bill, let's go back. You and Sharon were talking about the endorsements. Do the endorsements, especially coming from newspapers like the New York Times, the Washington Post, the LA Times, do they really hold that much weight anymore? Do people go, let me see who I'm going to vote for. Who is this newspaper or that newspaper endorsing? I am under the belief that the endorsement coming from the newspaper doesn't hold the weight that it used to. What's your take?
Oh, I absolutely agree. In fact, I think that that's basically the only thing that Jeff Bezos got completely right in that op-ed that he wrote. He said, I don't think that anybody, there's a single person in America that goes, oh, well, newspaper A endorsed this candidate, so I'm with that candidate, right? That person no longer exists if they ever did. At this point, there is such a glut of self-selection, or of news, rather, available to everybody, that audiences are really self-selecting, right? They're kind of clustering on one side or the other, and then congregating in the comment sections and readership of various newspapers. And so, right, if you're a conservative, you're not going to want to read the New York Times. You're probably not getting your subscription delivered anymore. Although there are still some conservatives who subscribe for it for the crossword or whatever else. But most of their readership is essentially politically where all of their writing staff are. Same deal with the Washington Post, same deal I would suspect with the LA Times. And so if you look at what's happened to the Washington Post, this is kind of proof of that, right? Is they're getting subscription cancellations for not endorsing Kamala, which tells you that their readership already supported Kamala. That's right. Why they read the Washington Post.
Yeah. And did their editor quit?
Oh yeah, a number of editors have quit. There's a whole handful of people that are leaving the newspaper now. Same deal at the LA Times. And funnily enough, Jen Rubin at the Washington Post, who was formerly called a conservative writer, although she went too far off the deep end during the Trump years and lost even the pretense of being a conservative. But she was applauding everybody at the LA Times who was resigning. This was before the Washington Post had said they wouldn't endorse Kamala. And so she was applauding everybody at the LA Times who was resigning and said, why aren't more people doing this? Then the Washington Post refused to endorse Kamala. Radio silence from her. She has not said anything on it other than to sign a letter condemning the choice. She hasn't resigned. We're all waiting. We're all waiting, Jen. Hand in your resignation at any point.
Maybe she's got mortgage or car payments, or do you think she's going to pay off her student loan? I don't know.
She's got more than enough money.
Bill, talking about these endorsements, how important are these celebrity endorsements? I bet Bill DiAgostino waits with bated breath to see who Taylor Swift is going to endorse. Right? Am I right?
Yeah. That is actually why I just cast my vote for Kamala earlier today. Now, In general, I think they don't matter a whole lot. I think that what it might do is drive some modicum of turnout among people who are otherwise disinclined to vote. But I would argue that it probably plays more of a role than any newspaper endorsement. That is to say, though, just a non-zero role, right? Because I genuinely do believe that a newspaper's endorsement is more a hollow gesture than having any effect on people's voting patterns. I'd say it helps slightly, very slightly. But I would also speculate that having Beyonce come to your rally so that you can pack a stadium and then not having her perform probably upsets people and causes just as many people not to vote out of spite, right? I mean, like, we're talking margins that small. The only really meaningful endorsement I think that has happened this election would be Elon Musk's endorsement of Donald Trump. I think that the preference cascade that we've seen in big tech as a result of that choice, we now see like Mark Thiessen and others coming out very vocally in support of Trump, although Thiessen was pretty big on Trump before.
Right.
I think that it's had a measurable impact. And so he's kind of the exception to the rule. I'd say in general, doesn't really make a big impact.
You know, Bill, I think these decision makers are probably caught up in their own importance. They overvalue their own importance. Hey, Bill, I wanted to get back to this survey that you guys did, because I think there's some important facts that need to be brought out. MRC, as I said, MRC analyzed 660 stories about the presidential campaigns and found the media's queen, Kamala Harris, received 79% positive coverage, to Trump's 85% negative coverage. And as MRC puts out, that's a difference of 164% swing in favor of Harris. Why is this election even close, Bill? I mean, if you go by this, if you go by the media's self-importance, she should be running away with this. Trump should be in single digits.
Right. Well, the media are losing their power because they're losing credibility, which is frankly the only currency they should really be trading in. It at this point is quite clear, I think, to everybody that they are not as interested in ratings even as they are in affecting political outcomes. And that's clear because they'll do something like air a full night's coverage, a full week's coverage of every moment of the January 6th hearings, which are they were the driest, most boring. I mean, forget the partisan angle for a second. Who wants to watch that, right? And if you have any successful daytime television show that you're pulling the plug on so you can hear air Liz Cheney quoting Nancy Pelosi, right? Like, who wants to see that? And so it's quite clear, I think, to everybody at this point that ratings are not even their primary goal. It is simply politics. They see their goal as politics. And I would argue, in fact, that at least at these broadcast networks, and certainly at the cable networks like MSNBC and CNN, but also at ABC, CBS, and NBC, these three broadcast networks that we studied, there are very few actual journalists left. That is, people who got into journalism for the sake of journalism. I think that what you have instead are political actors who happen to have chosen journalism as the vehicle for their activism. And it shows in their behavior. And the American people have caught on to this. In a recent survey, only 36% of Americans said they don't trust the media at all. And only 7% said they completely trust the media. 7%. I mean, that's less popular than Congress.
Bring back right,
notoriously
Walter
unpopular.
Bring back Walter Cronkite. Bill, are there any points in this study that really need to be brought out? You know, you guys do a fantastic job. Total coverage added up to 24 hours, 15 minutes, almost evenly divided among the three networks. 8 hours, 20 minutes for NBC, 8 hours, 13 minutes, CBS, 7 hours and 42 minutes, ABC. Wow, you guys go into minute details.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're big on showing our work. That's a cornerstone of a lot of what Rich Noyes does. I do want to clarify something about this study, because I think that whenever we put one of these out, there are a number of people, specifically on Twitter, but really all over the place, who kind of misread what we're actually saying here. Okay. We specifically focus on evaluative statements about either of the candidates. So if, for example, they were to play a clip of a Republican member of Congress criticizing Kamala Harris, that doesn't count as negative coverage of Kamala Harris because it's a Republican member of Congress. It's a political actor. Or if we have a neutral statement from a journalist like, oh, President Trump hit the campaign trail today. Well, there's no value in rating that positive or negative. And so we're specifically looking at evaluative statements. For example, Donald Trump embroiled in controversy over racist remark, something like that. That would be considered a negative comment. Kamala Harris inspires crowd. That would be considered a positive comment. Rich actually included some of the some cases of what he would categorize as positive or negative for each candidate in the study to sort of highlight what we're specifically looking at here. But what I find particularly entertaining is that the vast, vast majority of the positive coverage that Trump got, which is only 15% of the Trump coverage was positive, the vast majority of that was sound bites from voters who had positive things to say about Trump.
Interesting.
That were then followed by, he didn't have an answer, though, for Trump wanting to deport all illegal, you know, some negative light that they paint Trump in right afterwards. And so it was not journalists themselves saying positive things about Trump almost ever. Almost
ever. How
about
that? That's true. Hey, Bill, what about the late night shows? You guys analyze them?
We do. We've actually, it's funny you say that. We have something coming out tomorrow on late night. Our poor dear Alex Christie watches all of the late night shows.
Okay.
And I get to participate a little bit. He'll send me clips when he's got a study coming out, and I have to make a compilation of all of the alleged jokes, I guess that's what they call them, that these hosts make. And you'll notice that there's very little canned laughter in any of these compilations, because the audience often needs a few seconds to realize that a joke has been made before they start laughing and applauding. But yeah, we've got a study coming out on all of the late night shows, I believe tomorrow. That'll be featuring a video cut by yours truly in there as well.
Well, you know where that video is going to end up? That video is going to end up right here on the AUN TV network.
I appreciate that.
Bill DeAugustino, Media Research Center. Bill, we appreciate you joining us here today. And please tell our audience how they can follow your work and the work of MRC TV, the Media Research Center, and all the other good things you guys do.
Yeah, absolutely. Come check us out. Read us once, twice, 24 times a day on newsbusters.org. We're constantly updating with all of the latest stuff that the media are doing. That's also where we post all of our longer form pieces, like our studies and our videos. You can follow us on Twitter as well, at Newsbusters or at MRC TV, or sorry, at MRC. And if you want, follow me as well. I'm Banned Bill on Twitter. It's Banned _ Bill, although no longer banned.
What? You're no longer banned.
Yeah. Yeah, all I'll say
How
is...
How did you get off banned? Because I'm still banned. I'm still banned on Twitter, X, or whatever you call it. I can't get off. I've even sent a message ad nauseum to Elon Musk, and I'm still banned on Twitter.
Yeah, actually, the change of leadership didn't do it. It took until I got a new computer with a new MAC address. And moved counties so that my IP address was different too. So you know, I'm like a ghost now. But all I'll say to your viewers is I caution everybody not to get into an argument with Chelsea Manning about about transgenderism, because you will be banned.
No kidding. Wow.
don't explain biology to Chelsea Manning.
You should put that on your resume, Bill.
I'm
Bill DeAugustino, MRC Media Research Center. Again, Bill, thank you so much for joining us. Take care. God bless.
Thanks so much.
And you are listening to and watching The Conservative Commandos with Sharon Engel. I'm Rick Trader. Go nowhere. Sharon and I'll be back with more news and commentary right after this break.
You're still looking good.
I'm still feeling good. You know, I've got all your MyPillow products. Mattress topper, bed sheets, MyPillows, towels, slippers, blankets.
I'm interrupted this commercial to do something I've never done before. Get two MyPillows absolutely free on orders of $100 or more. I can't do this forever, so get on board with this great sale today. Our best-selling six-piece bath towel sets or kitchen towel sets, just $29.98. Our famous standard MyPillow is only $14.98. Queens, $18.98. King size, only a dollar more. Body pillows, $29.98. Multi-use MyPillow 2.0s with pillowcase, $9.98. Save $40 on our Spring Percale and Giza Dream bed sheet sets. Any size, any color. So go to MyPillow.com or call that number on your screen. Use your promo code to save up to 80% on all MyPillow products. And when you spend $100 or more, get two standard MyPillows absolutely free.
And welcome back. Welcome back to the Conservative Commandos Radio Show with Sharon Engel, and I'm Rick Trader, coming to you from the MyPillow Studios, the My Store Studios of the AUN TV network. And hey, I want to remind you about our voice text hotline and what it is for. It's for a couple of things. Number one, for you to communicate with us. You can send us a voice message. You can send us a text message. Sharon, we had a couple of great guests. I want to thank Bill DeAugustino from the Media Research Center. I also want to thank Timothy Head from the Faith and Family Coalition. And what else we got to do here? Oh, yeah, SharonEngel.us.
My website. Go there, get my books, or call our text hotline.
Voice text hotline, 415-854-2677. 415-854-2677. As I said, that is the AUN-TV voice text hotline. It's not the Newsbusters voice text hotline. But for right now, we are out of time. That means that we got to run and we got to go. Take care. God bless. You bet. You're going to see us tomorrow, and that'll be on TV and on radio.
Las temperaturas siguen subiendo.
Las temperaturas siguen subiendo.
Así que no olvides comprar los ingredientes esenciales para la temporada. Goya ofrece una amplia variedad de productos perfectos para el verano. Sazón, aceite de oliva y mojo para tus parrilladas, néctares y agua de coco para refrescarte y hasta tus snacks favoritos como chips y galletas. Con Goya puedes encontrar todo lo que necesitas para crear recetas deliciosas y disfrutar de la temporada al aire libre. Visita Goya.com para recetas. Busca productos Goya en tu supermercado favorito. Si es Goya, tiene que ser bueno.